fasi ya rejina. Honorable Slaw, you always get inspired right at the 12th minute, not the 11th hour.
Excuse me, Chair, maybe it's not that slow then. You were asked a question, but you touched it a little bit and left it when I thought you were going to cover me. The matter in relation to what happens in the process of pricing and electricity. That ESCOM does not decide, but ESCOM will make a request, which the regulator will look at, and the regulator will do the necessary consultation and ultimately determine the price that ESCOM will use. It is not very clear if that happens, because in terms of this whole presentation, I don't hear about NEPSA. Whether the same regulator would be applicable here, or here the system is different, because it's the private sector. And if it is different, who is responsible for the pricing? But added to that question, Chairperson, there is this thing, the pages are not numbered. Under the BFP working rules, there is a rule that says the BFP should be adjusted on every first Wednesday of the month. The question is why? Should it really just be done because it is the first Wednesday of the month, or is there an intention to do it? And the following bullet point says, overstroke other recoveries incurred in the fuel price review period will then be cleared by the next one, which means every month the over or under recovery will be cleared. Now, what happens if things were normal? Sometimes the business people, when you are still below profits, they say you're still battling. When you reach, they say you break even. When things just break even, there is no under recovery or over recovery, that month is uneven. But still, in terms of the above clause, they must open it. Why should they? Why? And lastly, also linked to that is that there are important months for changes. April for tariff, September for forecourt attendance and wage adjustments, October for wholesale and retail budget adjustments, and so on. These 3 months in a year, it's a cycle. Why these months? Are there no other timing? What informs these changes, and what informs these months? Thanks.
Okay, Dada, please.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would start maybe move backward in terms of answering the question as they've been posed. In terms of the prices, there are these working rules also, and we've got also them posted to deal with how maybe in further details these prices are adjusted. But they are also based, as I said, it was more of a consultative process. That is why, even right now, we don't really need to go and change the prices. Even if we see that there are some trends that they change, and for us to do that, we'll have to follow the same process of consultation around the figures. There are issues that the EDA has already raised, which are there are concerns when it comes to importing products. The issue that we have also raised, but the populace is experiencing in terms of high prices that are caused by the formula itself as it sits. For example, as we have already alluded to the issue of the premium of 15%, so some of those things that we need to revisit. But those things, as it was said, deemed there was an agreement to say, okay, let's settle on this price based on negotiations that took place then. So, in terms of those prices, but they are also still informed by the reality, because it would be wrong to just give a price and that has got no link to what is actually happening on the ground. Part of which is the time at which people change the price elements. For example, if you've got the tariff mechanism changed for the pipeline now, or the transporting fuel from Durban to Johannesburg, which NERSA sets the tariffs for. It approves the tariffs, which Transnet applies for the trial tariff, and then they approve the tariff. Once the tariff is approved, it then gets incorporated to our pricing mechanism, because we'll have to you have to recoup what has been sent to us. Otherwise, it's either going to charge less or include less in price or include more. So we need to await that feedback, so to include it, and then the process starts. Other things like the charges on an annual basis that are set by World Freight organization there in terms of freight charges, all the charges are changed on an annual basis, and it is at the time that they are changed and they get included. The others are things that are outside of our area, but for example, the changes in the salaries of petrol attendants. Those are negotiated, and there was a 3-year agreement that was in place, and then as those were adjusted, we had then to incorporate the adjustment in terms of the retail matching. And then in terms of maybe the roles and responsibilities, NERSA is responsible for regulation of the petroleum pipeline, that is the storage and as well as the piping, the associated infrastructure for liquid fuels. We are responsible for the price, the regulation of the price, as the Department of Energy. Hence, what was said earlier in the beginning of this financial year around the issue of saying we are working towards ensuring that all the regulatory issues are handled by NERSA ultimately, so that you can have one regulatory body, and the department is left with issues that pertain to policy formulation and the monitoring thereof, or the implementation thereof. So that is the situation. Even our current structural changes are informed by the process to say we've got petroleum regulation, which deals with regulatory aspects, including licensing. But as we stand now, NERSA will set the tariffs, and then those tariffs then get included in our pricing mechanism, which include other aspects. Then going back to the issue of the IBLC, the import laden cost or price, is that it was based on the import parity pricing at the refinery gate, to see at the refinery gate, as you take the product out, how much. It was based on term contract prices that were being used, and also there were changes also in the international fuel market, like they were used by Bahrain as well as Singapore. Then we changed to 50% Singapore, 50% Bahrain. Those 50% spreads were also part of the negotiations and the discussions to say that in terms of the normal product flows, one can safely take a position that you'll have 50% coming from the Med and 50% coming from Singapore. And also considering the refinery, the efficiencies, because we said we're not looking at the poor performing refineries. So if you start to look at poor performing refineries, there you also had to regulate for inefficiencies. So that was the informed, and it was a settlement. It could have been maybe a 60-40 or a 55-45, but it was deemed that it's better that you have a 50 and a 50. But those issues are part of the things that you need to robustly engage upon. And I think one of the things that we saw that was kind of lacking in the terms of the BFP is the automatic adjustment of certain other elements based on the changes. Because even if you see a change, you can automatically go and say, now we change it to 60-40. You need to stick to that 50-50 until you go through a process of consulting and reviewing the whole PSP. Whereas we need, in the one of the important things we need to do with the next, in this next round of PSP amendments, is that we enable these automatic changes wherever required. And then, again, when it comes to the issue of IPS, I just want to highlight the fact that in that time, there was an import and export control dispensation that was protectionist in terms of refining, with the view of encouraging local refining. And therefore, even the pricing was geared towards protecting the local food manufacturers. Now, especially after 2005, those regulations were reviewed, and now we have what we call import and export guidelines, which allow also other parties, other than people that are having refineries, to import product, seeing that our demand has actually even exceeded the local manufacturer. So no manufacturer can say that someone who's not having a refinery in the country importing, you are discouraging local or domestic refining, because that refining capacity has been exceeded by the demand. To look at issues, there were some differences in terms of the pricing elements that were used themselves. For example, the fee on board for IPSC was a combination of 8% postings and 20% spot prices for refineries in Singapore and Bahrain, for example. And the insurance also, the ocean leakage, all those elements were different. So during the process, there was also an interaction around elements themselves to say, how do we change them? It was not just a question of changing the name only, but it was looking at these differences in the elements that were used. Okay, going back to the issue of the Sasol continuing to support the country in terms of the low prices. I would say that there are two elements in terms of the security. It's one is the element of the sheer availability of product. To say that if you have product, you are also one step ahead. But then the question is, are you having it at the price that people can afford? Because what is unaffordable to me is unavailable or inaccessible to me. So from an availability point of view, one would say that there is some assist in terms of the beneficiation of our coal resource. Now, the challenge is that if Sasol, sometimes we talk of Sasol as it used to be then a parastatal, whereas now it's no longer the situation. And then sometimes people even talk, relate to Sasol sometimes as our national oil company. It is a part of South African company.
But we've got 23% as government. Surely there's an element of influence who can exert there. Honorable members, not so? Can't run away from the fact that that's quite a chunk of shareholding. One of these days, we need to come back and tell us, what are you doing with that 22% influence?
Yeah, I'm going to get to that as I'm talking. Is that we're looking at the national oil company being PetroSA, and then we have Sasol with a shareholding by coming through the PIC. And in terms of that kind of control, from I'm talking now from a shareholding perspective, it is a matter that is not necessarily residing directly with the Department of Energy. We have
Aibo. Government, Kabaza.
Yeah.
You don't split hairs. Government.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, the cabinet sits in one boardroom or in one committee room, whatever, and they come out there. Government. When Comrade Tipuo, Minister Tipuo Peter, speaks at times, it's not just something that comes from the Department of Energy per se. It's a product of times, if not most of the time, that has been influenced by other ministers as well.
Yeah.
If you're in Tuala, thank you.
Yeah. And then when it comes to the pricing mechanism that we have, because it is a deemed pricing mechanism, again, the challenge there is that we have a price and you take a particular position on the price. What we experience, because we have also discussed the issues with the I mean, personally, I have had an engagement with Sasol around the issue of pricing, but even to look at some kind of future pricing. The problem with that has always been that if you have a price that is lower from a Sasol angle to be able to supply the Indian market, what is going to happen is that guys supplying from the coast will not be able to then sell at a profit inland. And as a result, they will then decide to say, I'm going to only supply where I can make a profit. And then when you send it in inland, what is going to happen is that the price is going to either shoot up or you are going to have to be prepared to run dry in terms of product not being supplied inland, or have higher tariffs for the pipeline because it will be running at much lower volumes than what the pipeline is designed for. Now, when it comes to people in remote areas saying that it's difficult to get to people in the cities, do we have enough people to do IT pricing? When you look at IP price inspection, there is a, we must consider the fact that inspecting and monitoring as well as ensuring compliance, it's a very difficult area. I mean, we have, even when engaging other government departments, other jurisdictions, we found that to be a concern. But more so for emitting paraffin, it's sold in spaza shops, it's sold in some corner shop, and whereas one would want to over-regulate and go to those areas, the problem is that there's also some room to allow that area of trading. Although we want to keep the prices at the level where we have set it as government. So it is a concern. And generally, I must not beat about the bush to say that when it comes to compliance monitoring and enforcement, it remains a challenge. Instead of having inspectors, we've got one inspector per province, and there's also inspection, what I would call self-inspection, where if someone sees a price going much higher, is able to report to the department. So the self-regulation does play some role in that regard. But the problem is that even when you look at the enforcement, from law enforcement viewpoint, if there's been some criminal activity in one area, and that is a case, this will be a case of someone selling paraffin at a higher price. The other case will take priority. Those are some of the challenges that we're experiencing generally when it comes to compliance monitoring and enforcement. But one of the things that we're planning to do is also to get the message out there. When you look at the price of paraffin, currently the price of paraffin that we're looking at is linked to the wholesale margin, the retail margin, by percentage, the 33.3% of that becomes the retail margin. So if the price of the wholesale price of IT increases, the retail price increases even more. And therefore, we want to have the retail margin for paraffin fixed, also as part of dealing with the affordability issues for paraffin users. And for that, we are also going to engage at the various regions to get the message across and for some people to understand that there is a single national maximum retail price for paraffin. Now, when the other issue was petrol and diesel dumped by paraffin going up, why paraffin? In instance, from a chemical composition viewpoint, paraffin is more or less the same as a jet fuel. That is why when it produces from the plant, it's called the DPA, this is dual purpose kerosene. And then you separate it as a send it to use it as jet fuel or use it as paraffin. And also, it's closely related to liquid distillate, so in other words, it's related to diesel. That is why a person can put paraffin into diesel and run the tractor, because for chemical composition, it's more or less the same, except for a few changes, differences in vapor pressure and others in terms of the paraffin itself as a chemical substance. So, hence these changes, it does relate to issues of jet fuel and others as an element. And then I'll move further to say, in terms of the question asked by Honorable Highland, to say, do we see another fuel price element added to Cleaner Book because of Cleaner Fuels Project? I'll say that we're dealing with these issues because we are in a regulated space. Had we not been regulated, the two things that a person would have to do is to either charge, would be to charge more for the better quality product, which means that somehow there is an element of a justifiable pass-through cost, but we need to interrogate that and see how much of that is really justifiable. And also, if you are supplying fuel, you could have a situation where your competitor might be more efficient and supply it at a lower price or have a smaller increase than your increase. And therefore, we need to consider that. So theoretically, I would say that there will be an element of that, theoretically, based on sheer economic principles. But there are other issues that need to be looked at, also concerning the situation of, are there no investments that were supposed to have been made prior to this increase to then have only a marginal change? So these are some of the things that we are interrogating with respect to that. And then the question of, is it not cheaper to import crude than to import finished product in terms of our comments? I said that crude is finished products are beneficiated from out of crude oil, and therefore there is an expectation of those finished products being higher in terms of price than crude. But it's also a question of that margin. As we said from time and again, the refining margins are very thin, and we do not regulate refining margins. So if one is importing, because of a deemed mechanism here, it can happen that at some stage one is closer to the actual refining margin, or one is high, because at the time when you buy and at the time when you sell, there's also a time lag. And then you can, there could be some scoring. And we do not dispute the fact that there could be sometimes an advantage in importing someone who does not run a refinery, because running a refinery in itself also you incur additional cost. So there will be those things from time and again. We have had, I think it was 2009, where we had even an anomaly there because of some changes with refineries being down and some elements of petrol going towards use of fuel, of naphtha for chemical production. We had an anomaly where the price of petrol was lower than the price of crude oil. It did happen for a short time. I think it was the beginning of 2009, where we experienced that, and we had to dig deep to find out why we did have that kind of an anomaly. And then, when it comes to the prices of bitumen, I would say that we do not regulate bitumen as well as other prices. And that thing is very important, especially when it comes to us talking about petroleum products, that we consider the fact that when we're talking of refining, we are not only looking at petrol and diesel. There are other components that go to making things like even lipsticks, waxes, and varnishes that come out of crude oil, because crude oil is like the mother of all petrochemical or chemical sectors. So from that end, we sometimes narrowly talk about supply of fuel and not talk about loops. Talk about the base oils. You know, I was recently, last week I was in Devon in a base oils and lubricants in Daba. And it's important to consider that. But with bitumen, I've also spoken to them. Sometimes you find that another problem is that you do get a situation where you've got increased supply, and then all of a sudden, you've got more than what the market requires, and then at the time when you've got more than what the market less than what the market requires, the demand increases. It's the same like the winter month problem that you experience in the country when there is more demand but there is less LPG. So these are some of the challenges that we face. Then, in terms of the long term solution required for liquid fuels. We've looked at issues like biofuels. Gas also has been spoken of as being a very accessible fuel, one of the advantages. You can have GTL and put and get fuels. That is why the such interest to pursue and try to find solutions to the challenges around the safety, health, and environmental issues related to things like hydraulic fracking, so that we can be able to utilize or beneficiate the shale gas that we have in country. So these are some of the things that we are looking at, including biofuels, although the challenges are there, again, are matters that are related to the pricing itself. But we are engaging National Treasury around pricing for biofuels. And then when it comes to the maximum retail price on LPG, we note the comments based on the cosmetics of the document and what was presented. We apologize for that and just want to mention that the column on far right is for the coastal prices, which are a bit higher, which are a bit lower than the inland prices, which are a bit higher because you must include the coast as you move through the zones from the coast to the inland. And then the difference between 93 and 95 is all about what is called the octane number. The octane number, which is it just talks to the ease of burning of the fuel when it is in an engine, and then it can then easily start and move. So it's the ease of moving. So I just want to clarify that coastal, because of the vapor pressure differences, it's low pressure at the high altitude and then higher pressure at the lower altitude near the sea. Near the sea, you need, it does benefit you. For most of the time, you need that because of what is the in terms of the mechanism of the working of an engine, the internal combustion engine as we have it. So now, I wouldn't like to move out of here having wrongly said that you don't need 95, you need 95 here, but in inland or at high altitude, you don't necessarily need. In some countries, they even run it at 89 in some of the countries that are high up with a high altitude. So it's all about it. There is what is called a RON number. Then there is a MON. With the MON, we'll deal with when you're moving, stopping, starting, when there's city driving and there's country driving, as they call it. But all of them deal with the issue of ease of burning and running the engine. And why is diesel not regulated in this country? I just want to allude to the fact that diesel has always been seen as a commercial fuel. Used in the industries and not necessarily used by motorists to drive from one point to another. That is why the other phenomenon that is that has been noted, especially coming from the early 90s to now, was what is called the dieselization of cars, where we got more and more cars being running on diesel, which was not the case previously, where diesel was more used for machinery in the industry. So that is why we have had a situation of diesel not being regulated. There are some arguments coming up now for regulation and against regulation of diesel. And then the 50% premium, whether it is fair or not, I think this is part of what we need to get down to in terms of the review of the BFP that we are embarking upon at the moment. And as the information that was shared also allude to what we're, some of the things that we have found out now to say, looking as also on our locality, as being at the southern tip of Africa, there are certain advantages and disadvantages in terms of the access of to international trade in terms of finished product. Then we apologize for the acronyms. We have tried not to do it, but we will promise to not repeat the same mistake. In terms of stock financing, as one would understand that you would have, even just for crude, you have a situation where you, if you've got 107 barrels per day, and then you've got 35,000 barrels or say 100,000 barrels sitting in a ship. In terms of financing that, that will not normally be something that you will just do on your balance sheet or on your own, based on your cash at hand in hand. So what you would do, you would get some financial assistance, taking from a reputable bank to be able to do the deal. That is part of what people engage upon. This is why also the concern around demurrage, because you have a people that are wanting to get into the industry and they want to trade, only to find that that whole stock financing costs and other costs are wiped off, their profits get wiped off by the demurrage charges that they pay when the ship is standing there. Because the margins are very thin, although the amount involved is very high. So that is was deemed, and as a practice, it's also deemed a fair thing to do, to incorporate these stock financing charges. And then, as well as issues pertaining to the cost of storage, as I think all the prices were taking on them. And then, I think I've dealt with the issues to some extent of the advantage in importing a finished product. That someone is being compensated excessively, I think for me, the finger of the blame will squarely lie on us as a department to be able to scrutinize and see where are the areas that where we can ensure that there is efficiency. We don't regulate and incorporate inefficiencies. And I think that in the review, there mustn't be any stone left unturned to see if there can't be any cent that is saved, or not necessarily saved, but to say optimally utilized, especially considering that a 1 cent one cent per liter change is almost equivalent to 18 million rands in the economy. When it comes to the deregulation to remove government control of levies, there was a debate around the issues of levies in fuel prices, and that issue was discussed especially around 2010. This was raised as well as issues around subsidies. But I must say that we take it in this country, the levies are being used for a myriad of meritorious work. And some of the levies components of the levies were seen there being channeled to the construction of roads were being also damaged by the same trucks that transport fuel. And then we also got the new multi-purpose pipeline, getting a 7.5 cents per liter share of that to be able to be constructed, as we have it now, having really did us a big favor in terms of reducing the restrictions or constraints in terms of getting products from the coast to the inland. Close to home, when it comes to issue of levies, it's the very the so-called BLNF countries, which are intrinsically part of the South African market, which is Botswana, Lesotho, Namibia, and Swaziland, who, as alluded to the presentation, that you could go there and get the prices lower than our price because they don't have those levies included. And there are other countries which we have alluded to in terms of either subsidizing or putting levies that then one would see judge it on how meritorious they are based on the country's need and if this is the best instrument to do. Some of the questions that relate to this, although I'll talk to them, are not really affecting them because they are also within the ambit of national treasury as the ones that are imposing these levies. Thank you.
Listen, I can't think of any question that left out. I was taking them as a response to them.
That is slow.
Chairman, this time we talk on this matter, the more explanation comes, the more I feel I lack a lot of knowledge about the matter. Point number one, I have always assumed that the word tariff is another way for price. The tariff and price is one and the same thing in terms of the language of where price is used as tariff. But I tend to realize now here that we have two different things. The price determined by the department, the tariff, one part of the tariff determined by NERSA, the other part of the tariff determined by the National Port Authority within the same flow of the substance as it moves from crude oil to a petrol station going on changing. That is the one area that confused me, because then the tariff by the National Ports Authority I'm not sure if it goes to enterprise, or it goes to transport, or it goes to, because it deals with oil, it goes to energy. I know that NERSA is accountable to energy, and this one is accountable to transport, I think. The second part, Chairman, is well, crude oil, we do not have crude oil in South Africa, I know that, I'm not confused about it. We do not have crude oil here. Now, when it comes with a ship, at what stage does South Africa take ownership? And during that period, who becomes responsible for whatever you want to call that, takes over those issues of tariffs, and prices and levies, as you name them, up until it gets into a refinery and it goes out to the other side as something else. All of that process says to me, no, Joe, you don't know what you're talking about here. Says to me, I don't know what I'm talking about. I seek a little bit more clarity, because there is also the way that there's levy, there's tariff, there's prices. And all of these three ways are applicable in this particular industry. And they are all administered by separate people.
Honorable Slow, can I be a little bit unpopular? Personally, I've got some other engagement to look into, which demands my input, climate change, which this committee is engaged in. If I can just throw a curveball to you and say, would it be helpful if the department can respond to your question in writing so that they can clarify those terms? Actually, I'm itching to ask more questions, but I just feel that it would better or right to put them in writing. Thanks very much for being considerate. Honourable members, it's obvious this was the first intensive journey into this area, pricing in the liquid fuels. Although we didn't touch much on gas and paraffin, but at least there has been some indication of how prices are determined there and what influences them to an extent. I'm also glad that members have raised quite a number of pertinent issues, the issue of deregulation, which is found in policy, and when that can be implemented, and what are the prerequisites for that. I deliberately provoke the issue that the department must talk about stabilization funds rather than sweeping it under the carpet. Of course, I would be keen if the department can come back to us on that vis-a-vis slate levy, because I sense to an extent slate levy seem to be addressing some elements of stabilization fund. But I acknowledge that the department has not yet addressed itself on that. There are quite a number of other issues that have been raised there. Although there are this erratic behavior in supply and demand of bitumen, but if we look at the infrastructure built program that the government has got, the question can be very clear. Can we afford to handle the bitumen issue on the rail in the way we're being told that sometimes it's there, sometimes it's not there, because we're going to put in 850 billion and we're going to have 10 and 20 ton trucks having to go all over the country on tar road, not on gravel road, if I can use a layperson's language. And you cannot plan things on that. I don't know, I'm just throwing it. It's not only for you, but it's something that's very, very, you know, pertinent. And it's a byproduct of crude that one acknowledges. You didn't handle my IDLC issue, but as I say, it would be helpful that some of the things are responded in, you know, in writing. But picking up one or two things, apologies if I miss out a few. Factors that influence BFP, you know, for the first time that one realizes that amongst other things, we need to be quite clear. Do we have a role to play as legislator? We can see the executive is playing, and we've listened attentively to the extent that the regulatory mechanism is not yet completely molded, because the vision is that at the end of the day, NERSA should be handling the regulatory mechanisms and practices, or should host that practice. The prior composition, very agitating for us, because we only hear people, you know, exchanging articles over media about this and that levy. Maybe as we roll down the line in our journey on this area, honourable members, it's good to get to know the extent to which these various levies have an impact on our economy, how appropriate they are. We may have to do some joint initiatives with other committees as well, because as you can see, from one source, price of fuel, there are hundreds of levies which go different directions. Of course, we also have a duty to ensure the efficient utilization of the funds, which you can do jointly with other members. Of course, there's a very interesting part, global dimension. Can I offer that one day? I'm sure Professor Greenberger from Washington can be a very helpful one day to linger with us over a video conference. He's got very interesting things to tell us about fuel pricing and how they are determined. He's an authority of over 20 years in this field. I was very struck by some of the things. I'm just saying, you know, appetizing you, honorable members. Amongst other things which I think should be a homework to us, is actually the BFP determination practices and mechanisms from a comprehensive angle. I think I've learned quite a handful and mouthful regarding petrol, but I'm not sure the extent of diesel, paraffin, and gas. And you can sense from Matibela's questions that, I mean, a rural person would, and someone who works in directly, you know, instinctively would react to those things when it comes to paraffin. Surely would be interested to know those things more in future. Honourable members, can you then conclude and close on the fact, on the basis that let us find some space next year to handle this very, very item, but at higher levels, and probably even if it means pulling in experts or other people, explore whether we should even create a platform to even engage with the industry itself, you know, from this angle. But obviously, we'll respect the department and see, you know, we don't preempt, you know, the work that we're doing. Just now, we've been talking about the roadmap. Just now, we've been talking about the refinery audit. Just now, we've been expecting you to come with the revised liquid fuels charter. All those have one way or another, you know, influence and impact, or sometimes that impact is reciprocated from this one single issue, basic fuel price. Honourable members, we're supposed to handle minutes. Now, I do not know, I don't see copies of minutes, but I think also we don't correct in any case. So we'll have to shift that. On that basis, let me thank everyone for coming here. The industry is listening, and once again, as you can see, we have unraveled a lot of things. So it's not for us to just sit and run through these issues that have been raised today as our homework. We do expect the industry, one way or another, either to engage with us directly as the legislature, they know how to do that, or even engage, as they've already been doing, with the department itself. But at the end of the day, we all have to ensure that we give confidence to this sector, whether it's the prices, whether it's sustainability, whether it's access, such that they impact as positive as possible to the transformation agenda of this country. Thank you very much. Duli Buha, the meeting stands adjourned.